Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world,
pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio here on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Hope you had a fine weekend as it cooled down a bit. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network joins us. Greg, how was your weekend, my friend?
My weekend was about as slow paced as I get to have, meaning I had a play-by-play event on Friday night. I had a play-by-play event on Saturday night, and that's it. And so next week's even slower. I get one on Saturday night. So people ask, do I get a little bit of downtime? The answer is yes. I joined you from the lake house in Michigan last week. Quasi-worked through that vacation because I get another one where I won't be working in about 3 weeks. So this is kind of my time to recharge the batteries a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you. It's hard to do that because even though it slows down, it never really stops. You just don't feel like you ever really get off the carousel, but it slows down and you don't get quite as dizzy, I guess.
You have to feed the content monster 24/7 or at least daily. 5 days a week for you when your name is on the marquee in terms of doing the show. So I've been there. I get that completely.
Absolutely. And you have a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of different things you do. I mean, I want to make sure everyone knows what all goes on with the ISC Sports Network, which based right there in Indianapolis, a very unique outlet. And although you do many other things involved with IMS and the soccer team, which we'll talk about, Indy 11 soccer. I mean, there's not much you don't have a hand in, to be honest with you, when it comes to Indy area sports.
Well, first of all, thank you. But secondly, as I tell people, you know, like the Pacers run was fun for me because I got to be more of a fan. Because officially the Pacers aren't on my beat about everything else is. So from an ISC standpoint, like for example, this weekend we produced a USA basketball event in Kansas City. We produced Ultimate Frisbee in downtown Indy at Coon Stadium. We produced soccer in New Albany at the UPSL level. And we produced, Indy Little Women's Soccer Friday night and the Indianapolis Indians series against the Omaha Storm Chasers. So that is a weekend for us during our slow time. Now, for example, the only thing we'll produce the next 4 days is Query and Schultz. So, you know, even in the summer, things slow down a little bit. By the time we get to August 22nd, we'll do 4 high school football games every Friday night. We'll start picking up college sports around that time as well. So, we have built a business that keeps us hopping, and as you well know, busy tends to equal paid in what we do. So hence, that's why we do what we do.
Oh, absolutely, and it's very unique. There's not many places that I know of that do what all you guys do. I mean, it's amazing because it fills so many different niches that probably wouldn't get filled if it wasn't for ISC, because it's hard to fill in all those smaller ones with individuals, but at least when you have someone who specializes in that and does such a great job as you guys do, it it brings a lot of different sporting action from around the state to Hoosiers.
Well, first of all, thank you. And secondly, part of that is just kind of my knowledge of the market and knowing what's available, what's out there. And obviously, being in a place like Indianapolis that, you know, from a television standpoint is rated somewhere mid-20s, from a radio standpoint is, I think, the 38th market from a size in the country. But honestly, as I tell this to high school students, college students, when I have to speak to broadcast classes and stuff like that, because of all of the things that go on here, Indianapolis is really like a top 10, top 15 sports market. You know, and let's face it, if you are in a market that has all of the big four, you know, so MLB, NBA, NFL, NHL, et cetera, there really is no downtime. You know, there's the overlap. If you're in a one or two or maybe even three pro sports market, you know, a top flight market, you're going to have some downtime. Well, courtesy of the Indiana Pacers, you know, our downtime in Indianapolis this year is about 3 weeks because literally the first Colts training camp practice is 3 weeks from Wednesday. Normally, it is a 5 or 6 week gap. And again, you know, I'll use the example of Querry and Schultz. I filled in for Schultz in the show 2 weeks ago because he and his family were taking their summer vacation. I watched game 7 from the lake house in Michigan. You know, it kind of hit me. It wasn't an official job responsibility. Crap, Jim, if they win, I'm going to miss the parade. I would love to have missed the parade. I wish that that's the way that it went down. Because none of us have always had to think about, hey, we need to kind of schedule our vacations around the NBA finals. That's not been a problem for 25 years in this area. So the goal when you do this is to have as little downtime as possible. But in a market like Indianapolis, you get downtime maybe twice and sometimes once from the 500 / the end of the Pacers season until training camp starts. And then, you know, some years because of free agency and or the NBA draft, that downtime would kick in right about now. Because this team is so locked in, yeah, there are going to be some smaller moves that are made. And again, I consider Miles Turner coming back a done deal because it's clear that both parties want this to happen. I don't think that's going to be huge sports talk radio fodder when Miles signs a 2-3 year extension somewhere in the $20 to $30 million range per year. I think it's what it's going to look like. To be frank, there's also not that big of a market because kind of every team is there's not a lot of cap space going around, and the one team that kind of has it is the Brooklyn Nets, and I'm not sure who wants to play for them right now, knowing they're in a complete and total rebuild. The other bit of downtime that we get would be when the Pacers aren't good. When the Pacers are done and don't make the playoffs, then we in Indianapolis, it's kind of slow the last couple of weeks of April or the first week of May. Again, that is assuming the Colts have kind of a middling pick in terms of the NFL draft. Like, we go NFL draft heavy here if the Colts have a top 10 pick. If the Colts' first pick is, say, 15 or lower, it tends to be, hey, let me know the day of the draft what's going on. But in terms of kind of the sports talk meter, it doesn't exactly get pushed a great deal unless the Colts kind of have an Anthony Richardson-level pick or an Andrew Luck-level pick or a Quentin Nelson-level pick. And then we tend to go all in, you know, on things like that. So that 2.5-minute answer, Jim, there is my 30 years of experience doing this for a living and knowing what the sports calendar tends to look like in the state of Indiana. And those are the only really kind of downtimes that we tend to have.
And you are the master at that. Soccer, I know you had some soccer duties this weekend, but speaking of soccer, where are we in the world of Indianapolis possibly joining the Major League Soccer?
You know, it's kind of all quiet on the Western Front. You know, I think Major League Soccer acknowledges that, without saying it, MLS has basically said, hey, the current franchise and current ownership group, in other words, the Indy 11 that play in the USL Championship, that's not what MLS is looking for. Right or wrong, they don't seem to think that that would be the way to go if they came here. the potential MLS bid for Indianapolis would be run by the Simons, aka the Pacers. I think they're still getting their kind of their ducks in a row, still trying to acquire land. The city has basically said, hey, we're not going to build a stadium without having an MLS guarantee. I think MLS is basically going to wait until the next time they feel they are going to expand or need to move a franchise. And then at that point in time, then maybe the accelerator button gets hit here. So I think it's a matter of laying the groundwork. Let's also be honest, Jim, and I'm not sure how much of Indianapolis politics you follow. You're probably healthier if you don't. But the mayor is embroiled in a sexual harassment controversy that doesn't directly involve him, but a member of his staff, and he has been kind of embroiled in this. So there, frankly, there's some other irons in the fire right now that the city of Indianapolis is kind of dealing with. So I honestly think the MLS team here would be more at the discretion of Major League Soccer. They had said once San Diego entered, and San Diego was playing for the first time this year, that they were going to kind of hold on new teams for an unknown amount of time. Obviously, that always changes, okay? And so when that does, I think Indianapolis would be at the front of the line, but I really think we're on Major League Soccer's watch and just kind of waiting. And again, that might be, you know, I think that might be 3 to 5 years. Maybe. And again, that's more than 50-50, but it's certainly not 100% is the way I would look at it, Jim.
Hey, well, you know, it's something, right? It's just, that's just curiosity. Sure. Honestly, sometimes I think that it would be better if things were left the way they are. I know that everybody always wants to grow, but this is a good soccer league. I know from the Indianapolis team, the Louisville team, hell, the Louisville team has won multiple titles, but I also know the fan support. It's sure. Right there. It's good. You know what? I'm like, you know what? It's like the NCAA tournament. Quit trying to add teams. Nobody's begging. Nobody's begging. The thing right. About the NCAA tournament, nobody's asking for more teams. As a matter of fact, last year we saw why there does not need to be more teams. But I this is one of those times like, I'm just like, you know what? Maybe you just leave this alone. I think that there's less at what you want to call it, the triple A. Would you call it the triple A level of soccer?
It is, but at the same time, it's not affiliated like triple A baseball is. All of these teams are independent. And so one of the things that it's one of the few times that I'm not correcting you here. This is other people.
No,
you're spot on. That's why I want to make sure I'm saying this. You have a better grasp than most. But sometimes I hear, hey, can we have a professional team? I'm like, brother, these guys get paid every 2 weeks. Trust me, this is professional. So again, for those that don't follow the sport or know it as well, and that's okay. The sport is still in its infancy here, you know, in this country from a professional standpoint. There are 4 fully professional leagues in this country. Okay. There is Major League Soccer. Major League Soccer has its own reserve league called Next Pro, where the vast majority of teams are direct affiliates, and those guys are paid by the parent club. So the best closest example I can give you is that FC Cincinnati up the road, which is now in Major League Soccer. This is their 7th year in MLS. They have a reserve team, a JV team, for lack of a better term, called FC Cincinnati 2. And those guys get paid. They get paid by the same company that pays the first team in FC Cincinnati. There are a couple of independent franchises that play in that league. For example, there's a team in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Chattanooga FC plays in that league, do not have a parent club. They are an independent, unaffiliated team. But those are 2 of the leagues. And that league, the second league, Next Pro, would be considered the double A level of the sport. There is only 1 league that plays what would be the triple A level, and that is the USL Championship. That's where the Indy 11 play. That's where Lou City plays. Then there is another league under the same banner as the USL called League One. For example, that is where Lexington, Kentucky played the last couple of years. They have now moved up to play in Indy and Louisville's league, the championship. There are 24 teams that play in the championship. There are 14 that play at League One. So again, there are probably in the neighborhood of 75 truly professional, independent soccer teams that play in this country. Again, a sign of the growth of the sport here in the United States.
And I agree with the growth because once, even like I've said it many times, once you start to understand it, you have a lot more respect for it. I think there are too damn many leagues, too damn many things for people to figure out. And that goes across international. I'm all, Mike, of course, he covers a ton of soccer and he's on with me each week. And I'm always like, okay, what league is this? What's this mean?
Right.
The Premier League is not as good as the Champions League. Wait a minute. Or the Champions League is better than the Premier League. And you get relegated, which that's a good thing. I like the relegation. I think that could be, we could use that in college sports, but as a matter of fact, but there's just too damn many in baseball. You know, boom, you got Major League Baseball and you got the minor leagues. Football, we kind of know, because there aren't that many, but soccer just, it's so splintered. But maybe that's because the popularity is so much and it's growing beyond our comprehension. I don't know.
So here is the way I would describe it, and you make some very valid points. But for example, there are, and I'm going to doing the math quickly here, there are 116 fully professional teams in England and Wales that play in one pyramid system that has five different leagues. Now, is the popularity of the sport here what's going to be in England? Of course not. Is it ever going to be what it is in the UK? Of course not. But I bring that example up for this reason. What you are now getting into a period of growth being is not just from the league's perspective, but business owners, entrepreneurs, sports fans, etc., that go, hey, I want to have a team in my market. I want to have a team here. And again, I'll use the example, not in your backyard, but our backyard when we grew up. You know, the team you've heard me reference in Southern Indiana FC, they want to be a professional team. They're a semi-pro team now with the idea of, hey, they want to represent Clark, Floyd, Harrison counties and the surrounding areas. And what you start doing, Jim, is you kind of, you know, look at, all right, the population of these three counties is X. And if the synapses in my brain are firing correctly, I think the population of Clark, Floyd, and Harrison County is about 150,000 people, for example. And you go, hey, could you make this professional team work if you're serving this market of 150,000 people? And that's when you start doing the math and the economics from a business standpoint and say, hey, do you think that that happens? We kind of use that example in Indianapolis. If there is a major league soccer team that comes in, you almost go, well, it must be the death knell of the team that's in the USL championship. Not necessarily. There's some extenuating circumstances there, part of the Indy 11 being part of the management of Grand Park. And there has been this exodus for like the secondary pro sports to not play in Marion County, but to play in Hamilton County. So for example, the hockey team here that plays in the ECHL, that is the AA level of professional hockey, they moved this year from the Fairgrounds Coliseum to Fishers. There is a pro volleyball team now that plays in Fishers. There is an indoor football team that plays in Fishers. The G League team for the Pacers will be the Noblesville Boom. You can probably guess where they're going to play. They're going to play in a new 3,400 seat arena right off of I-69 in Noblesville. And so because of my knowledge of the Indy 11 situation, Jim, if you looked at combining Hamilton and Boone counties at Zionsville and Carmel Westfield, Noblesville, Fishers, there's 450,000 people that live there. And so again, from the soccer perspective, Jim, it's all about economy of scale. That is what you are looking into. And that's why you are seeing the growth of the sport. But it's also why you see so many teams, so many different markets, and so many different leagues across the country.
Well, now switching gears, no pun intended, but it sure does work if I have you for a few more minutes. We're not that far away from the Brickyard. Do you operate at IMS during the Brickyard?
I do a little bit of stuff for the fan. I'm kind of off and on in terms of doing PA, whether they need me or not. I was contracted to do that until about a week ago, and they said, hey, we're not sure we need you, so that's okay. I'll do some pre-race and some post-race stuff. So I'll admit to you, Jim, when I got home from soccer on Saturday night, I kind of drifted over to the broadcast of the race in Atlanta, knowing I've got 2 or 3 weeks to kind of play catch-up. So my level of interest in NASCAR is, am I talking about it this year on the radio? If the answer is no, then I don't pay attention. If the answer is yes, then I start to pay attention, and I am in that boat. So that will start to get a little bit of my attention for the rest of the month of July.
And the reason I bring it up is Chase Briscoe from right here down the road and Mitchell scoring a huge, huge win in the previous race at, right. I guess they were in Pocono, right? Where he won there with his first win with Joe Gibbs Racing, which puts him in the playoffs. Huge, huge win for him. Takes the pressure off these drivers. You get a win, and man, win and you're in as far as the playoffs go. And they had been fast all year long, but he could not get a finish. I mean, four or five poles now, including starting the season, the Daytona 500. But they get the win in one of those faster tracks. Pocono is very unique. It's if you're not a NASCAR fan, what do you call it? It's not a tri-oval. It's just a triangle.
It's a triangle, correct. There's the joke is what turn four? Because there's only three of them that they have at Pocono, yes.
It's crazy. With three different straightaways, very unique. But Chase Briscoe, man, it's very cool for him to get that win. And now you wonder, a track like Indianapolis, very, very different. It is the most different track on the NASCAR circuit, because not because of its length. Daytona is the same length. Talladega is the same length, actually longer. But there's no banking. At Indy, it's 9 degrees in the corners compared to like 28 degrees at Talladega. So much different style of racing, but still built for speed. And man, how cool would it be to see someone like Chase Briscoe added to the list of Tony Stewart and Jeff Gordon? Did someone say Ryan, what's his name?
Max Ryan Newman is also a Brickyard 400 winner as well. Correct.
How crazy is that? For that many, and that's shortest. I mean, this race has been around for like 30 years, but for that many Indiana guys to have won is kind of crazy.
Correct. And frankly, the track you referenced with Chase, Pocono is one that is closest to Indianapolis, in terms of not a super speedway in terms of NASCAR parlance, but a very fast track that is very flat and has exceedingly long straightaways. So typically, if there is a track that carries over, if you have success at Pocono, in theory, you should have success in Indianapolis, too.
It'll be fun. Well, brother, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, and we look forward to next Monday, as always.
You got it, buddy. Have a good week.
You too, as well. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network. Make sure you go check out everything they have to offer, because it's a lot of different things that you might not be able to find elsewhere, especially for those of you that are not following on one of our great affiliates, like, or even if you are one of our great radio station affiliates, like 99.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, and the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne's Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked where you got it right there. You don't need to go anywhere else. But and you can also find, like I said, the ISC Sports Network. Just go online and Google that stuff. GTS, back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Appreciate you being with us, no matter where or how you're listening. I hope you had a good weekend. We had some rain in that cooled everything down. That is for certain, has got out of those nasty 90s. But it's not done. But looks like it's going to cool down for at least a few days. As a matter of fact, I think we had seven
or eight straight days of 90 degree temperatures. No fun. I see one, two, three, four, at least 4 days of 80s. So got that going for us, which is nice. Speaking of nice for Indiana basketball, but since we spoke last, Prince Alexander Moody wrapped up his visit in Indiana and put a bow on it with a commitment to the Hoosiers and Darren DeVries. As the Bishop McNamara, Maryland 6'3" guard, gave Darren DeVries his first, I guess, commitment as a recruiter. I'm not counting this first team he put together. That is just that's his first team. That's going out and hit the portal and all that, not really recruiting. Trent Sisley was already in that fold. I guess you could count the Serbian as part of that, but really, as far as recruiting goes, here's your first commitment for the future. He had a strong performance last weekend and during the first DMV Live period, and this is a result of the staff that Darren DeVries has brought in. Direct results from relationships. I think this is I can't remember if this is a Rod Clark connection or Kenny Johnson connection, but that is there's no point in beating a dead horse, but just gosh, it's almost impossible not to look back and think, well, I thought it the whole time, but what the hell was Mike Woodson thinking? He came in, took the job at IU, didn't do anything as far as the staff, except for put his buddies on the payroll, did not change anything as far as assistance for recruiting people. It was very weird. It showed a complete refusal to understand how the game worked. So regardless of that, I'm not going to go down that path, but you just ask yourself, what the hell? Anyway, Prince Alexander Moody, I think he's a four-star by most, but he had almost three assists to one turnover ratio. And had two games with zero turnovers, fresh off of his commitment this past Friday. The first game for Moody was 17 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 0 turnovers in 29 minutes. He had that performance in front of Indiana head coach Darren DeVries and assistant Kenny Johnson, so that probably answers that question. He's a DMV kid. DeVries and Johnson saw three of Moody's four games in some combination of either both courtside or one or two on the site. But I've talked about how this staff, they hit the ground running. I mean, they had to put together that entire team, a staff, everything, which it's not like other guys have not had to do that. Pat Kelsey did it in Louisville, and he did it quite successfully, as a matter of fact. And to me, it's a little more impressive, not taking anything away from Darren DeVries. It just Pat Kelsey came from the freaking College of Charleston. So very impressive what he did last year. Anyway, it's impressive to see the recruiting gains that Indiana is going to make very quickly. And I think that the more of these commitments that Darren DeVries and his staff are able to get, it's just going to feed the monster, so to speak. Great players want to play with great players on great teams. Now, how deep into recruiting are the Hoosiers going to go? That's my question. I don't see any program, unless we're talking first round, one and done, five-star guys, having more than say four incoming freshmen. And if you're having four incoming freshmen, one of those needs to be a five-star dude, man. You've got to have that elite talent because, A, you don't know how long they're going to be around. There's too many what ifs. So that's why I always refer back to Kurt Cignetti and production over potential to a degree. Now, there are guys like Trent Sisley. I think Trent is going to be two things: a great asset to Indiana basketball, and he's going to be one that you can probably count on for staying at Indiana. A rarity in today's athletics scene, period. But he's a kid that is good and wants to be where he is. You're not going to get that very often, but you can start to cultivate that. And I think that with this successful recruiting staff that Darren DeVries has, that is going to be the case. They are going to start to get more Trent Sisleys from the state of Indiana. You find those guys that I want to go play there. I want to be there. But if you start building the program back up, a lot more people are going to want to be there, period. That's common sense, of course. I mean, that goes without saying any place. But Indiana is different. It is different because Indiana is going to produce talent each year. I'm talking about high schools. Not that California does it, Texas does it, other place does it, but per capita, I don't think any place does like Indiana, not per capita. There's always elite talent coming out of this state. And if you're the state team, you should be the first choice generally two times out of three. I mean, it's not like you're going to cut Purdue's head off. They've had a very, very successful run here in the last several years under Matt Painter, especially within the Big Ten Conference. And he would like to see that continue. So he's a hell of a recruiter, let me tell you. But we'll see how much of a recruiter he really is, because I'll be honest with you, he's had it pretty damn easy the last 8 years. He's been going up against Archie Miller and Mike Woodson. And the Indiana started to wear after 2 years of Archie. You know, Indiana will pull you in no matter what, just because of the name. Well, that started to wear about 2 years into Archie, and then it wore kind of through. But that's changing. But you have to win on the court, and I don't see why that doesn't happen. Indiana has really increased under Darren DeVries their non-conference games. You've got Kentucky, Louisville, Marquette, Kansas State, and you never know, they may add somebody else. You've got these preseason games. You know, a lot of times those preseason games are kind of glorified exhibitions. I don't think that's going to be the case for this team for when they play that Serbian team. Those guys are pros, man. They get paid to play. They have been around. They're older. It's going to be interesting. But I think that this team is one that they're not going to hear, as opposed to last year when everybody was already anointing Indiana as a potential challenger for the Big Ten championship, which could not have been any further from the truth, how talented they were. This team's not hearing that. Actually, they're hearing kind of the opposite. Not a lot, but, you know, hey, they're undersized at the five. What are they going to be like? There's no mantra of them having to live up to winning this and winning that. which is actually the best thing. Just leave the table clear. Set your own table. Set your own mantra. Set your own expectations. But I think the fans need to do that too. I think the fans need to have actually zero expectations would be the best thing. Just go into the season. Zero expectations. When I say zero expectations, I don't mean that you don't want your team to win. I mean, you're not expecting this team to go to an Elite Eight. You're not expecting them to compete for the Big Ten title this season. Not saying they can't. Not saying they would. Just, I think that if that expectation was not there this year, you never know. I'm not saying they're going to compete for that because I don't see this team being in the top four of the Big Ten. Purdue is very, very strong. Not that they can't play against Purdue and not that they can't beat Purdue, but over the long haul, I think that there are a few teams that are just better poised and have teams that have been put together for a longer period of time. So there is another thing that is without question, the type of players that Indiana and Darren DeVries and staff are going after. You better be able to shoot. I don't care if you're the damn manager. You better be able to shoot the ball, which that should excite Indiana fans more than anything. Because shooting for Indiana has been so devoid in the last several years. It's going to be, fans are just going to be joyed. I really do believe that no matter what, fans are going to enjoy the hell out of this upcoming season. I think they're going to get a team that plays their ass off defensively and shoots the ball. And there may be nights when the ball doesn't go down for whatever reason, but I think it's going to be fun. I think Indiana could be not a dark horse, but one of those teams you don't like to play. It might be one of those teams that Purdue and Michigan and Illinois really don't want to have to play. If they end up playing the type of defense that we're expecting, and if they get on a shooting run with all these guys, that could make things difficult for you. Make things not fun. Yeah, it will be interesting. Fred says it'll be interesting to see Indiana without a traditional big. Boy, oh boy. How about without two? But they're not going to have that. It's a completely different style. I mean, it's going to be up and down. Every guy they recruit is a shooter. Now, they will get a big in eventually, but I think he will probably be a shooter or on his way to that too. The Durkat kid I was just talking about has offers from Villanova, Miami, Rutgers, Maryland, Oklahoma State, Creighton, Xavier, and others. His brother Jordan played at Merrimack to begin his career before transferring to Rutgers. His dad Gene played at Florida International in the late 1990s. Last year, Durkat averaged nearly 25 points and 8 rebounds, 3 assists a game. You can go to thehoosier.com for more on him with some highlights as well. So, and then I think we talked about Boogie Cook last week out of Louisville, Indiana, providing him with his first offer. It's a big deal. Got to take a break from the hard truth. The Stilling Company Studios, plenty more coming. Dustin DePierrick will join us. And Zach Browning will get us caught up on all things that have gone on recruiting-wise over the weekend as well. We'll return to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Glad to have you along. I hope you're doing fine and enjoying your day no matter where you are, how you're listening. We appreciate you greatly, especially all those on our radio station affiliates around the state and whether you're listening on social media as well. If so, please hit the like button. Just hit that for us. It does so much. And subscribe as well. Speaking of which, go to thehoosier.com if you want to keep up on what the heck is going on day in and day out, who's getting the offers, who is committing, inside information, thehoosier.com. With On Three now, the place to be. And you can get it all for just $1 for the first month and 50% off for the entire first year. Get it now while it's still there. Baseball. The Reds, they had a nice little weekend. I think that who was it, the Padres they were playing? I can't recall, but I think that they had a good run. But every time I think about baseball, I think about my Reds, and then I think about my Reds, and I think about Eli De La Cruz and how he's not going to be there as soon as his contract is gone because the Reds won't be able to afford him. But that's being Reds fans. Cardinals and the Guardians. Cardinals, man, they're bouncing back after a few years at the bottom of the Central National League Central standings, 7-0 win over Cleveland, and the lowly Pirates, 12-1 over Cabro's Mets. Cabro, you're probably not listening right now. Let's see, the Reds, they get a win. Yeah, the Padres, 3-2 win over the Padres, and I think that they may have won that series. They did. Good for them. And that was after the Reds, after losing three straight, they actually won. Okay, they won a series with the Tigers. Then they won a series with the Twins. Then they lose a series with the Cardinals, which that one was the important one since that was in the division, jacklegs. But then they win a series with the Yankees. And unfortunately, and then see, and then they win a series against the Padres. These are some of the best teams in baseball. Now they take on the Boston Red Sox tonight at 7:10. But gee whiz. They're 44-40. At least they're over the Mendoza line. They've only won one straight, but beating some great teams, but not the right teams. Chicago, the Cubbies, still holding on to first place. But the great thing about that Central Division, the Reds down in fourth, they're only 5 games back. Milwaukee is 2 games back. St. Louis just 2.5 games back. So that should be a fun division to watch this summer. Oh, there we go. Cabro is on there. Yeah, they're on a little nosedive. That was the beatdown, Cabro. That was a beatdown. Aaron says he's a Tigers fan, and they are having a great year after being worse team-wise. It's amazing what they're doing, to be honest with you. How the hell did they lose? How did the Reds win a series with the Tigers, the Yankees, and the Padres? And just, it's nuts. But, yeah, Cubbies are going on, man. Their Cubbies are going on. Roswell said his little town made the national news last weekend with the General Lee jump. Town swelled from 18,000 to 36,000 one night. Dukes of Hazzard. Well, congratulations on that. You know, there was Isom, Kentucky, a little bitty town down near there. Shenanigan or whoever that was had a rodeo down there back in the day. We used to rodeo down there. But the Brewers, 8-2 in their last 10. Yeah, they're on a heater. They are on a heater. That's what you have to do, but it's going to be a fun. It will be fun time of the summer. Who's going to make the trades? Because that's what's going to happen. I just can't believe the Reds are beating all these great teams, but not the right teams, man. We'll see. But if nothing else, it's fun to watch Eli De La Cruz. What a sensation he is. And then the Reds almost have a no-hitter. So they're rolling. They're still there. They're within a shot. So you're saying we got a chance. Yes, they do. But that's where we are, man, looking at baseball and, of course, the summer basketball leagues as they will be going on with the AAU, Indiana Elite. And Indiana will be paying a lot of attention to that once that gets running up again. As you remember, we followed that intently last year. A lot of recruits that Indiana was not able to land Trent Sisley, one of them that they did get, and very fortunate for Darren DeVries to have. I've said it many times, you know, very, very fortunate to have someone like that in your, it kind of in the bank for you, because he checks so many boxes. Besides a really, really good player, he's a great kid, comes from a great family. He busts his butt. He wants to play for Indiana. There's not much more you can ask for. Not much more at all. We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Dustin Napierik will join us. And Zach Browning later will get you caught up on all the ins and outs of what happened over the weekend. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Dustin Napierik, how was your weekend, my friend?
Good. Good. I'm trying to think of slows down. I didn't have to be anywhere. It was kind of nice.
I was like, that's why I was asked, how was it? Hope you didn't have to do anything. Only thing, did you have any weddings?
Did not have any weddings, but it was me and my wife's anniversary. So,
happy anniversary.
Thank you.
That's more important
than no new weddings.
Yeah. When's the next wedding?
I don't know. We don't have many more. We're getting to the end, and that's kind of why the last one was a big one. But I'm old, so I'm running out of my guys are mostly, you know, married. And
do we have a wedding count?
My total's got to be at like 30.
Oh my gosh!
Probably over the course of, because we're talking about. Like, first friend wedding was probably 07, somewhere in that line. Actually, like 06, something like that. So we're looking at like 19 years of at least one wedding. So, you know, it's got to be 30 minimum, probably more than that.
You know, that's a lot.
God, that's definitely. We had 7 a couple of years ago. So this year, I'm not sure that we had one of her cousins, we had this friend. I don't think we've got another one this year, actually. So, you know, we're kind of quieting down on it, but there's been a lot. And so probably since we've been together, it's probably 30 since we've been together. It's more than that before. So I don't know. Been to a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of cake, man.
In this business, don't skip weddings, or at least try not to. That's my advice for people is, if you're going to get involved in sports writing or sports casting or sports whatever, there is going to be reasons for you to skip weddings. Try not to. One of my life advice pieces for people getting into this. So
that's a lot of gifts. It's a lot of cake, but
it's a lot of gifts. It's a lot of gifts. It's mostly cards, because I'm not that creative. But you know, like,
yeah,
my wife's better at knowing how to use the registry.
See, I would be like Vince Vaughn in Wedding Crashers over there eating. Oh, this is good. This is really good. You should try it. This is good. he was just constantly. Now, can you guess? Do you have the great gift of guessing what wedding gifts are? Like no. His counterpart did?
I can't look at a box, because you don't see them get open most of the time. Like now, it's so much more like registry based that like you just go on like Crate and Barrel or something like that, and the boxes show up at your house like a week later or something like that. So, you know, like it's more that anyway. So you never really see, it's not like there's like the table, you know, where it used to be, you know, it's not so much of that anymore. Cause you need stuff that doesn't really fit there. You know, it's better if it gets delivered to your house.
Absolutely. I'm sitting here texting with Chase Briscoe, trying to get him set up to come on. Do you know who that is?
I don't. I should.
He is from Mitchell, Indiana, right down the road, and but he is a NASCAR driver.
There you go.
Just won at Pocono a week ago, so he is in the NASCAR playoffs at the end.
There
of
you go.
But the Brickyard is just 3 weeks away, probably. They're about tomorrow's the 1st of July, so it's like
beginning of August.
4 weeks.
4 weeks.
Yeah.
Beginning of August. God, we're almost all there already. Something didn't really happen. I don't think.
Dude,
June wasn't even a thing. It just blitzed for me.
It's like the same, the Big Ten media days, football in Las Vegas hit in this, I might as well say this month, tomorrow's July. So 3 weeks from now, the Brickyard is 3 weeks from now. Fall camp immediately after that. Colts are already going up. When do the Pacers refire?
End of September. So today at 6 o'clock is when the calendar flips, and so free agency officially opens. So it is a big day today on the Pacers calendar. But we will see. So Summer League coming up July 10th to 20th in Vegas. So they're going to have some of their new guys in at camp. You know, obviously Cam Jones and Talon Peter, the two guys that they drafted, will be on that list. But I presume Johnny Furphy will, be in Vegas to get some work. I presume Enrique Freeman is going to stick around as a two-way guy and get some work. And they'll piece some other guys together. I mean, they signed a couple dudes on Exhibit 10 contracts, which basically is G League contract, but it's like you get a bonus for playing on the G League team. So it helps them, kind of keep some of those guys in. I think you get like about a $75,000 bonus. So I think Steven Ashworth from Creighton, Samson Johnson from UConn, and EJ Felton from East Carolina are the three guys they picked up from that. So it's not going to be a very headline grabbing summer league team for the Pacers, but they are going to play some games. I think they're playing a lot of other playoff teams, which is probably going to end up being equal because, those guys aren't adding a whole bunch of new talent. This year, a lot of those teams have either traded away their draft picks or, they're picking later in the draft, but all the same. So that is Pacers schedule, but you're not going to see the Pacers get back going actually in camp until, end of September, beginning of October.
Yeah. And need the break off. Just think, sure. Can you imagine if there was international play this summer?
Yeah, it'd be a lot.
There wouldn't be much for maybe Pascal Siakam because, of course, obviously.
Well, it'd be Andrew Nembhard because Pascal's a Cameroon native, and I don't know how Cameroon did in the last Africa tournament. I'm trying to remember. Obviously, South Sudan certainly has become a force in Africa. I think Ghana's been obviously always been pretty good.
That's crazy.
Why?
Well, I mean, just don't.
Somebody has to win it, Like,
well, yeah, but I'm just meant from a basketball standpoint. You don't think of much basketball going on there, but it's becoming a worldwide sport. Sure. I mean, I guess it's got to be the second biggest sport worldwide besides soccer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you've seen investment in it. I mean, I think, obviously it goes back to, Bloomington has some connection here. Remember the A-Hope program, certainly didn't, comes with a certain connotation because it was investigated by ESPN and whatnot. Obviously brought a lot of players to the United States. It was a move made, obviously, and it's certainly just a lot of unmined talent, I guess is the best way to put it. And there just was not a lot of infrastructure, and it's been working on that infrastructure, over really the last 30 something years, bringing a lot of African players to the United States, kind of teaching them how to play basketball. And that's what really built Pascal Siakam. I mean, he didn't pick basketball up until he was 17. I mean, like he'd hoop outside at his seminary where they had like kind of a hoop on a grass on like kind of a dirt, playing surface. And it was Luke Mba Mute, who was a native of Cameroon, his name some people might remember, played at UCLA, had about a 12-year NBA career. He had a camp, and Siakam showed up at this camp. And then the next year he showed up at the camp again, and they said, hey, you've got an invite to Basketball Without Borders if you want it. There's these various kind of events, kind of tournaments, throughout the world, and where they have this one in Africa is in Johannesburg in South Africa. And he showed out at Basketball Without Borders, got an opportunity at a prep school in Texas, and then he ended up at New Mexico State, and he ended up being a three-time All-Star so far. And you've seen the growth there. So it's definitely an area that, was not a lot of infrastructure in it. They're trying to mine and make sure that, they give, kids from that area the opportunity to grow. And so, you know, you saw that, you know, like, yeah, I think it was Luau Deng that really invested in South Sudan. You end up seeing those guys being really competitive in last year's Olympics. You know, and even though that's a, you know, by definition, it's a war-torn country. And it's a country that, you know, came out of war, basically. It didn't used to exist. You know, it didn't exist 20 years ago. I mean, I remember Peter Jerkin was from South Sudan, you know, the IU recruit. And I think I want to say that in the midst of him being recruited, he was here, I think, at the time when South Sudan, you know, came into being. Basically, when it was created, a separate country or an independence declared or whatever, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of stuff happens over there and whatnot. But, you know, there has been a lot of investment in Africa and trying to make sure that those players get an opportunity.
And not only that, we have seen, just like we did several years ago in the NBA, we're on the precipice of this, I don't want to call it an invasion. But
let's not use the word anymore, by the way.
But, yeah, I'm just ahead. Being facetious, but you know, sure. and I don't want to use what is the word I'm looking for? Not on
influx, basically. Influx. There is
a great influx of European talent,
sure,
to the college game strictly because of NIL.
Right.
No, and now rev share.
Sure. No, 100%, because, you know, again, in Europe, they got to get paid, you know, and so it was always a decision whether you wanted to, and because, you know, the tough part in Europe, you know, is if you're growing up, is if you wanted a college education at the same time that you were playing club ball, you know, your professor doesn't care if you play on, you know, Barca or whatever, or play for Barcelona or play for, you know, Real Madrid or play for whatever, you know, like whatever basketball club there is, whatever athletic club there is, like, you know, like it's not connected to the university. So they don't care, you know, like they don't, they're not making the same kind of, you know, exceptions for you to get to class. You don't have the same infrastructure as far as, you know, tutoring is concerned and, you know, academic support and all those kinds of things. And there were, you know, I remember when I covered James Madison, there was a player, I think he was from Spain. I think he was grew up in Argentina, but he lived in Spain. And, you know, he had to make the call and he wanted to come to the United States because you didn't have that connection. But the flip side of it was you didn't used to get paid, you know, also like you had the, you know, you could get paid to be a professional player in Europe at 16, 17, 18, you know, 19, whatever it was. And then, you know, play that into getting drafted. Now you're playing that into, you know, being recruited more often because it makes sense for you from a financial standpoint. And you've just seen the investment in it in Europe going back to the 92 Olympics. I mean, there was certainly talented players in Europe before that. But the investment there, you know, has been different, basically. And the, you know, kind of belief, you know, everybody saw that dream team and had, you know, something to believe in. And ever since then, you've seen a change in what, in you know, European basketball being better. But yeah, the NIL thing puts it into hyperdrive because, you know, there's now no downside to coming to the United States. I mean, other than the fact that you have to, you know, cross an ocean, you know, you can get an education and get paid and play basketball all at the same time. You know, so you used to have to pick two out of the three.
Yeah, and now look at Illinois. Mm-hmm. Illinois is a program that has jumped headlong into this. I think that they have no less than five European players on their roster right now, and that was all coming with the exception of one, his brother was added, but these are all new recruits on the Illinois team. So, boy, are we going to have something? I have no idea what Illinois is going to be like.
Sure. I mean, they already got good. You know, I mean, they put a what? I don't know how is it Yakukonis? How do you say
it? Yeah. Oh, Yakushonis, you're the kid that just was drafted. They had a couple guys get drafted.
Sure.
Which. And they lost a very good Morez Johnson to Michigan, who will start for them probably.
Right.
But Stojakovic's son is one of the guys that they picked up as well. So
the transfer,
Brad Underwood is underrated as having to rebuild year in, year out. He's done a hell of a job. They just can't quite get to the top, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's been close. Oh, okay, who's this? I feel like this one's not made an appearance yet.
Oh, yeah, it's just been a while. That's just Hank.
Hi, Hank.
Hank says so hi.
He's getting involved. Maxine's running around upstairs. I don't know what her current state of affairs is.
He's been banned from the studio for a while.
Wow, wow. Well, that's messed up.
You know,
like, we don't have a studio. We just have the couch. So Maxine can't be banned from that. Yeah, no, I mean, I think obviously Brad Underwood has, the way things are moving, you have to find a different angle. You know, you have to look at a place that you can go first to get yourself an advantage. And that's definitely a situation that Brad Underwood has had, is he's found himself an advantage, an opportunity to go someplace that other people weren't necessarily going, an opportunity that other people hadn't necessarily jumped on full bore. And so this is, you take your advantages where you can get them, because everybody's fighting for this. Everybody's trying to find a way to get players and keep players. And it's not an easy thing to do. And so you have an advantage when you bring them over, because they're not going to want to move again. But there's a lot of talent over there that people weren't looking into. And so Brad Underwood has a good chance to continue to build a pipeline there. You've seen it other places, obviously seen, you know, things St. Mary's has done over the years, really, you know, based a lot of its recruiting internationally. I think it's created a pathway for Illinois to get started and to keep itself as a kind of traditional contender in the Big Ten, even with this much movement.
Yeah. And even Indiana, they picked up a kid recently, a Serbian kid, and then they're playing in August in Puerto Rico against a Serbian team. And the guy that's setting this up is the agent for Joker, is the guy behind a lot of these kids. He had said earlier that he had never even thought about a college, you know, messing with a college kid. Now he said he expects to bring in 35 to 50 this year.
Right. No, it makes a lot of sense.
That means both of us are in the wrong business, my brother.
We were always in the wrong business, Jim.
Well, that's true. You ain't lying there.
Yeah, this was, we made a choice many years ago. Many people tried to tell us otherwise, that this was not going to be a wealthy, wealthy lifestyle. And we ignored.
Go get a trade. Go get a trade.
We ignored all of them. Nobody told me to go get a trade. Nobody was like, you're going to be a, nobody thought that. But everybody was like, you sure you don't want to be a lawyer? Like something like that, that makes money, like now. Probably should have. But anyway, no. I don't think
anyone ever thought I was that intelligent to recommend that. So we've got that going. Obviously, I'm not. Look what I do. So you got that going for you, which is nice.
We're on the same plane now. No, I think, obviously there is that influx. I mean, certainly there's, you know, the Serbia, the Yugoslavian countries in general have always had an influx of talent out there. And I thought the when that was one of the first things Woodson did was play one of those exhibitions with KK Betamax. I think Nikola Jovic has come to the NBA since then. I think he was on that team. You have some of these clubs, that one in particular is really based on sending players to the States. Is based on it's not necessarily for the purpose of winning European titles. It's for building younger teams and moving them up and creating these opportunities. And so they're going to, look at opportunities to play, in the U.S. against the U.S., stuff like that, to give these guys an opportunity to get these guys looked at, by, colleges, universities, to bring them over. It's just, it's an entirely new pipeline. And, it's not brand new, but it's one that makes sense for them now that didn't necessarily make sense before. It creates a lot of opportunities. It gives a lot of kids a shot to kind of expand their horizons, see where they fit. And, I think obviously this is good for everybody. Obviously the United States has been sending players overseas for years and years, and you get a sense of what your level is. It's better, basically.
What about this? I go back to the time when European teams would limit teams to two Americans per team.
Mm-hmm.
What about that? Limit it to two foreign players per team.
It might end up going that way. There's there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on there as far as passports and everything else that could be a whole new discussion as far as that is going forward. But I don't know. I mean, it depends. You know, I guess is the best way to put it. I don't love the idea of I don't love the idea of limiting opportunity and saying that people can't come, you know, and that there's an opportunity they should take. And so, you know, like I'm more of a free market when it comes to that. If the guys are good enough, the guys are good enough. And so, you know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be interested to see what that looks like. I don't know if that makes sense on the college level. To do it that way. Certainly it doesn't make sense at the NBA to say that, okay, you can't, you know, like it's supposed to be the world's game and it's supposed to be the best team in the world. So, you know, like there's no reason why the NBA should be like, well, you know, we should only have so many foreign players that they're only going to have so many Americans. Like, no, the whole point is it's supposed to be the best league, you know? And that means take everybody and whoever earns the spots. And obviously the NBA is an opportunity league. You know, when you get past a certain level, you know, you're looking for different needs and different situations. And there's guys that hang on, even if they're not playing very well, or if they don't play very much, you know, for years. But the point is it's supposed to be the best guys come to the United States. And so, you know, and it's supposed to be the best level. So I certainly don't like it at the professional level. Don't love it in college either.
I can't resist this. Brian, with the greatest thing I've seen in some time, Luke Goody should open up a shoe store, Goody Two Shoes. Come on. I mean, I could maybe.
It has NIL
designs or something.
Throw your name on it. Yeah. Don't actually make any shoes, but throw your name on it and you'll.
Yeah. I mean, he waited a little bit too long, but just maybe get someone who's an artist, make them just all different.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know how well that sells, but just the wordplay.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Right. And happy birthday to Cheryl Sizemore. She just turned 28, I think. So happy 28th birthday to Cheryl. We appreciate you and so much. Hey, we've got the great Dustin DePirik with us. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday, getting your week started off right. Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star, the Pacers beat writer, and your latest piece, Dustin, the Pacers are looking for depth at center, although with the loss of Tyrese Halliburton, that's what would be on a lot of people's mind, but that's not the case at the moment because they've got to get, well, they're hoping to get Miles Turner signed, so that is not an issue. But you mentioned that they're already over the salary cap, and so they've got some financial issues to work around.
Yeah, I mean, they will go into this, like, obviously leading into the offseason when didn't realize Halliburton was going to get hurt. They were certainly already going to be in a situation where they had to kind of up their spending, and everybody thought, okay, well, this is the year they finally go into the luxury tax. I mean, the Pacers have not. I think they've only been in the luxury tax once. And I think it's been sort of 20 years since they've done it. And so, you know, they've been pretty financially been obviously pretty financially frugal, but still managed to maintain a contender for most of this time. But they're look obviously certainly going into this after you make the NBA finals thinking, okay, well, you've got to spend to keep this team, and they probably still will, and go over the taxes. That's what it's going to take to sign Miles Turner. I mean, I think they're about $20 million under the tax now, and I don't think you can get him for $20 million. I think it's going to cost you at least $25 million. So it makes for some interesting decisions. And certainly they're not going to want to go a lot over the tax. You spend basically the taxes. It starts at $1.50 per dollar that you're over your first $5 million that you're over the luxury tax. And the kind of rate goes up from there. I think Herb Simon has it. I think the Simon family has it and can handle it. But, you know, you don't want to get too deep into it because you start getting into first and second aprons. And that leads into, you know, basically restrictions on your further movement. So that basically means the higher you get, if you're in the second apron, you really got to believe in your team. You know, you really got to think your guys are that, because it's hard to make moves, going forward. It's hard to make trades. You can't aggregate salary. So that basically means like you can't trade two guys for one guy in terms of matching salary. Cause that's a big thing in the NBA is making sure that you're,
you're sending out about the same as what you're taking in, basically, because that's what a lot of these trades have to be. You know, it's not like in baseball that you could say, okay, well, I want this draft pick really bad, and I'm willing to give you a $30 million player for him because I want it that bad. You can't do that in the NBA. Like, there's got to be a $30 million player in there. Or, you know, like if you're under the second apron, it's got to be $30 million guy for $30 million guy in, you know, like if you're lower than that, you can do like two $15 million guys to equal a $30 million guy. But, you know, bottom line, it restricts your movement. Like, it's not easy to do a lot of these things, and you can't just sign a free agent off someone else's team. You can re-sign your own guys, but when you're over the cap, you can't just throw $30 million at somebody. Now that protects you. So it's not like they don't have to worry about the Lakers just swooping in and giving Miles Turner a godfather offer where they're throwing $40 million at him because they're the Lakers. They're way over the cap too, so they can't do that. But, you know, like, it's still going to cost them a lot of money to sign Miles. And, you know, like, you know, Tyrese Halliburton makes $45 million a year. Like, you can't just go get an all-star for a year to take Tyrese's spot in the salary cap. He's still going to count against you. You know, like, you still have to pay him. He still is on your salary, and you have to make a roster work, even though you're paying that much money to go out to a guy who's probably not going to play. You know, like, that's the reality. That's how the cap works. So they got to do some smart things. I mean, like, when it comes to it does seem like they're rounding into ideas as far as what they're doing behind Turner, presuming they are going to sign him. They picked up Tony Bradley's club option. Now, obviously, they could trade him, and they could waive him without any kind of penalty. It's only, you know, it's a $2.94 million option, which in this whole scheme is, you know, pennies more or less. They offered a qualifying offer to Isaiah Jackson, you know, because he was due to be a restricted free agent. So anything anybody else does, they can match that. But, you know, he could also just take the qualifying offer, which is $6.4 million, which is not a bad idea for somebody that's coming off an Achilles tendon tear. So, you know, they might be close to final decisions on that, and go that direction. But certainly the biggest thing still up there is just when is this Turner thing going to get done? You've obviously seen, you know, you can bargain with your own free agents before today. Today, when 6 o'clock hits, is when other teams can bargain with your guys. So basically, like, they have until 6 p.m. To get something done without Miles being able to take any calls from any other teams. The situation changes at that point. I don't think that means they're going to lose him if he gets to 6 p.m. But, you know, at that point, he can get a call from Detroit. He can get a call from Brooklyn or somebody like that, that has cap space, or somebody else that would want to do a sign and trade, that he could force or something like that. You know, other people can contact him at that point. So you'd like to get that thing done, so that you're not messing with that, you know, going forward. So we'll see what happens there going forward, but that still remains the priority is getting that one done.
Yeah, and with the recent new draft picks that they picked up, although neither huge pieces, what do you foresee happening there?
Yeah, so it's Cam Jones and Talon Peter. Got to talk to each of their coaches today, actually. So Cam Jones obviously was a second team All-American, unanimous All Big East guy at Marquette. Played point guard this year. I think that's it, that, you know, big transition there. It was like him and Tyler Colic, were playing together. Colic, I'm not sure the pronunciation, but obviously he's a guy that got drafted by the Knicks. I think he was an All-American too. Drafted by the Knicks last year, so they had to move him over to point guard and be really more of a creator, and he took to that really well because they could use some point. The Pacers are obviously going to need some point guard depth. Certainly, they've got two guys you can trust in Andrew Nembhard and TJ McConnell that are going to move over. You know, Nembhard will move over for shooting guard, but that's not a big issue because certainly that's more of his natural position to start with. And McConnell certainly is a, you know, fine backup option, but, you know, you need three point guards and three centers. You need to make sure that you have that because, you know, guys get dinged up. You know, not a lot of guys play 82 over the course of the season. You know, you miss three games here, five games here, you know, a couple games there with, you know, a knee sprain or an ankle sprain or something small like that. You know, you can't presume that Nembhard and McConnell are both going to play 82. So you're going to need a backup guard in that situation. And Cam Jones has proven he can handle that position. So he's certainly a guy that they picked up with depth in mind. So, you know, he'll fit in, you know, learn to be a better defender, that sort of things. But, you know, guy that can create his own shot. I mean, he averaged, I think, 18 a game, about 6 assists a game. And again, was unanimous first team all Big East. So that tells you, you know, most of what you need to know. This Talon Peter character is really kind of fascinating. He's a really interesting story. Started his career at Tennessee Tech, didn't do anything there. Went to, it's Arkansas Tech, and did three years there. So this is a Division II school, you know, really scored the basketball, but again, it's Division II. He just showed a lot of athleticism and he could shoot the ball. So Liberty took a chance on him. He averaged about 14 a game for Liberty, but I think he led Division I in, you know, true shooting percentage. And so, like, obviously, you know, these are kind of, compound statistics that come from, you know, Ken Palm and whatnot, but it like kind of measures basically like what kind of shooter you are, you know, from two, from three, from the free throw line, and puts them all together. And he had the best true shooting percentage in the league, and he shot like, you know, 57% from the floor, 45% from three, 6'4" guard, really good rim finisher, really good athlete, and also really good outside shooter. Guy they you know brought in for a workout, really liked. He wasn't in anybody's kind of top 100 list, but the Pacers really liked him, and so he's probably not going to get he's probably looking at a two-way roster spot. So basically the best place to see him this year is probably going to be up in Noblesville, but you know it's a guy that they're really liking, is interesting, are interested in. He's a really interesting story in terms of just how he found an opportunity, certainly one of the successes, if you will, of the portal era. And of guys getting extra years and whatnot and COVID and everything. And so, you know, he's a guy that's, that they're going to give a chance to that wasn't really expecting to have one. So, you know, again, I don't think you're going to see him very much in a Pacers uniform this year, but, you know, he'll probably get some opportunities as a two-way, but he's definitely going to be a G League guy, definitely going to see a guy that you're going to see in the summer league and him have some opportunities here, might turn some heads out in Las Vegas, and that could be pretty cool to see.
Yeah, it's I look forward to the NBA Summer League, and I'd kind of forgotten about it this year because the Pacers, with so much excitement, extending this season into the summer, and then you're like, oh my God, the summer is almost over, and then you had College World Series going on. It was almost kind of a forgotten thing for me this year. Plus, with the Pacers not really
didn't have a first round pick. So
having a first round pick, now they get that back next year. They were able to get that back. How important is that?
It can be. I mean, it certainly depends on what they do. You know, like on a base level, it's like you go from picking 23rd this year, and you know that guy probably was going to have a hard time getting on the floor if they were going to pick somebody at 38. You know, they shaved a little bit of money off, and they obviously traded back in to get at 38. Obviously, once Halliburton went out, it kind of made sense to pick somebody up. But you know, like with them being as far over the cap as they are and close to the luxury tax, you know, you save, I think, a couple million dollars on a rookie scale deal when you go down from 23 to 38, but I think they still have reason to believe they have a useful player, and a guy that can step in and do something. And you know, even though they didn't pick at 23, you know, still getting a useful guy next year, you know, if they slide, you know, if they end up sliding, and I think they'll still be a playoff team, even without Halliburton, but you know, kind of my initial throw darts at the wall type of, you know, ideas that they're probably, you know, without Halliburton, they're probably a 7 seed, 8 seed, you know, playing round type of situation, but I don't think they're bad enough to be in the lottery. So, you know, what that tells me is they're probably, you know, pick somewhere in the 17, 18, 19 range, lets you move up a little bit. You know, obviously you're going to have some movement between now and then, some decisions you're going to have to make and have a better sense of, you know, what that person, how that person would fit in. So you're going to have to invest in that person a little bit more, but he's got a better chance of having an opportunity. Or if they picked, I think they picked somebody at 23, especially going into it thinking that you weren't going to have Halliburton. You're thinking, okay, well, where's this guy's opportunity going to be? You know, you're probably looking at a 23rd pick that is going to spend most of his time in Noblesville. Even if there's no knock, you can't make that guy a two-way, but it would still be a situation like with Jairus Walker, where he's having a hard time getting on the floor. You're having a hard enough time playing Walker, playing Furphy. You weren't going to have a much easier time, you know, playing whoever you picked up. So I think that it ends up being a better situation for, you know, whoever this guy is going to be. And there's a good chance that it's going to be a higher pick. Certainly they could surprise me. You know, they could always surprise people. They've proven to do that and hold steady and just, you know, not fall that far without Halliburton. You know, it wouldn't blow my mind completely if they won 50 games again. I'm thinking they fit more in the 45 to 47 range, but I think they're going to keep their heads above water and be an above 500 team and be a play-in to playoff team is kind of what I see them being right now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, no doubt, man. And so what's up for you for the rest of this short summer, I guess you'd say? Because you've it seems like it's off, but you've got the NBA Summer League, which I'm assuming you don't have to go to Las Vegas to cover.
No, not going to Las Vegas this year. That doesn't, the travel budget certainly took, was used over the course of the
playoffs. I can imagine.
So Vegas doesn't necessarily, Vegas on, in a year where they don't have a first round pick, doesn't make the most sense from a company investment standpoint. So I'll certainly be following that, obviously be watching those games on TV. This week is going to be busy. We'll see what all goes down, certainly, starting with Miles Turner and going from there in terms of how the Pacers, look to make a couple moves. So certainly be spend a lot of time on Twitter and on the phone, especially when 6 o'clock hits. It's going to be fascinating to see what goes next. So the next couple of days are going to be busy. Whoever they introduce and bring in is going to be interesting. And then certainly, following Summer League through then. And then when it hits the end of July, I'm going to do a whole lot of nothing. But the next 3 weeks are still going to be a lot of work to do.
There absolutely is, buddy, and we appreciate you very much. Make sure you're following Dustin and keeping up with all of his content at the Indy Star as the beat writer for the Pacers. Appreciate you, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jim.
You bet. We appreciate you. Hey, we've got more coming up. We're going to talk some Hoosier recruits, commitments, offers, and plenty more as Mr. Browning, Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com will join us as Indiana gets a commitment over the weekend from Prince Alexander Moody, who just visited. Also, if you go to the Hoosier.com, you can see tons of video breakdowns for on the football side of thing. The latest is Jamar Owens by Coach Griff. Every single player for the football team is signed video breakdowns for those. So make sure you go to the Hoosier.com. You can get that for a special right now. $1 for the first month, 50% off for the entire first year. Back with Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com right after these messages from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday, getting your week started. Hope you had a relaxing weekend as the temperatures cooled down a little bit with some rain through and not a lot to do other than watch some things on TV. But there was a lot going on. Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com joins us. Zach, how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic, Jim. How are you?
Well, I wish I was fantastic, but I guess I'm not far from that. It's just a little humid still. I got to get the studio a little cooler, baby. It's still I hate humidity. It's all the other things you can deal with, the heat, but the humidity just no fun, man. You walk outside, get hit in the face with a wet rag, a warm wet rag, that is. But it has been not quite that for Indiana basketball is they – They hit the ground running, and I've talked about this in the recruiting wise, and they have the staff to do it, and each of those guys are out doing what they do, and it has already yielded results. And I've got to be honest, that's pretty quick to land a kid of this caliber that has zero connection to Indiana, that had zero previous connection to Indiana, that had zero previous connection to IU. Very impressive for Darren DeVries and his staff, Kenny Johnson, Rod Clark, and those guys to land a prospect like Prince Alexander Moody.
Yeah, it just goes to show how important kind of the support staff. Of course, the support staff was just announced for Indiana and Coach DeVries, but the assistants and how important those guys are on the recruiting front. Because yes, Prince Alexander Moody talked at great length with On3 specifically about his relationship with Darren DeVries and how close they are and how Darren DeVries and him have already developed such a great relationship. But a commitment from a guy like Prince Alexander Moody doesn't happen 3-4 months after a head coach comes in and takes over a job, unless you have a guy like Kenny Johnson, unless you have Mr. DMV himself, that's what we'll call Kenny Johnson, because there is not a better, more well-connected man in the DMV along the East Coast than Kenny Johnson. We've already seen it, and we've already seen Indiana reap those rewards. Obviously, Prince Alexander, Moody, Indiana, well-connected with Latrell Allman, who's a DMV kid and a top 25 recruit in the 2026 class. Kenny Johnson is that guy. He is the man. He was that guy when Indiana had him the first go-around when he was on Tom Crean's staff. He was that guy, too, recruiting kids from the East Coast, from the DMV, and he's showing that he has those connections. He has those deep connections. He recruited a lot of these guys at Georgetown, where he came over from before he came over to Indiana and joined Darren DeVries' staff. So Kenny Johnson is already kind of pulling his weight, already showing why Indiana and Darren DeVries added him to the assistant coaching staff, because Prince Alexander Moody, he talked with Joe Tipton of On3 about it. He said that Kenny Johnson pretty much changed his life. He's known Kenny Johnson since he was in middle school, 7th, 8th grade, and that carried a lot of weight. And then from that point on, once you can kind of establish that baseline relationship with a guy like Kenny Johnson, then you can get a recruit onto campus. Then Darren DeVries can kind of work his magic. That's where he's kind of best. He's great at going out and talking to those kids and traveling. He's been doing a lot of traveling on the recruiting front over the last couple of weeks. But when you can get a kid on campus and you can really develop that relationship, and that's exactly what Darren DeVries did with not only Prince Alexander Moody, but with Alexander Moody's mom, with his AAU coach at Team Takeover. So Prince Alexander Moody was able to develop that relationship. He already had it with Kenny Johnson, but once he got on the campus, because of that Johnson relationship, he was able to kind of develop and further strengthen that relationship with Coach DeVries.
Yeah, and I think Joe Tipton from On3 was the first to have that. The commitment to Indiana, which has been happening time and time again. So that's why I keep telling you people, if you want to know what's going on and you want to know first, go to thehoosier.com and go there now, and you can get that for $1 for the first month. But the inside information that is coming via thehoosier.com and On3 is nonstop. And there have been a ton of offers go out, and we can continue to see the type of the style of basketball that Indiana fans should expect under Darren DeVries. My question is, with the attack that they have on this on recruiting, how many guys will they actually take? I personally don't think you should be bringing in any more than 4 at the most freshmen in this day and age, because of what you're going to lose next year, because what you don't know you're going to lose next year and you lose, and the transfer portal. I said it earlier in the show, and I go back to what Kurt Cignetti says, production over potential, because you don't know potentially how long they're even going to freaking be on your roster.
I think that's part of what makes it difficult to be a college head coach, whether it's football, basketball, whatever sport it is, because you're recruiting these 2026 recruits. Let's take them, for example. Prince Alexander Moody, he probably projects to be a 3-4-year guy at the college level, and you're hoping, if you're Darren DeVries in Indiana, that you get all of those years at Indiana. I mean, there's still cases where guys spend their entire college careers at whatever place recruited them. There's still plenty of cases of that. Just look at Purdue. They're a great example of that. So player retention is a key thing. And I think what you can do is, if you have success and you're able to build success, you look at Indiana football this past year, the player retention was really high. The top players, all the players that were going to come back and actually play on the first or second string on the depth chart on offense and defense, they all got retained. They all came back, because you have to have success. So if Darren DeVries, if Indiana is able to have success, you can start to begin to retain some of those players, and you can have some of those 3-4-year high school guys. But I'd say around 3 or 4 would probably be ideal for Indiana and Darren DeVries to take in this 2026 class. You got to remember, this is going to be another year next year, another offseason next year, where you're going to lose a lot of guys. There's only 4 or 5 guys next season that will have eligibility remaining on the team, and Prince Alexander Moody is one of those guys that will have eligibility remaining. You look at Trent Sisley, Josiah Miles, Nick Dorn, those are the types of guys that will have eligibility remaining. You look at Alexa Ristic. So there won't be a lot. So you're still going to have to build that solid foundation. If you can have 3-4 freshmen coming in next year, then you can kind of fill out what the transfer portal is kind of intended for, with those grad transfers, those 4th, 5th year guys, those more experienced guys that are more like puzzle pieces that you're just fitting into the puzzle rather than trying to build a foundation off of. So yeah, I'd agree with you there, Jim. I think 3-4 guys Maybe you're looking at a guard or two, a wing, and then probably a center in the 2026 class. I think that would probably be ideal for Indiana.
And plus next year, next season, Indiana will have the benefit of having a season for Darren DeVries under his belt, so to speak, can show the style of play that he, that you will, the players will expect to play at Indiana, and they can even better tell them, here's what we would like for you, here's what we envision for you, here's what we would like to get from you, and success. You know, success means a lot, so having some success on the court will also go a long way. But the guys that they are getting in this year, if they can get some playing time, or next year rather, if they can get playing time, that also just folds upon itself, whether it's Trent Sisley and Alexa Riskic, like you said, if they can get minutes and new guys come in and say, hey, man, he'll play. If you can play, he'll play you. And I think that's going to be huge. But I think Indiana's going to be a team that uses great depth, but we have to wait and see. I'm just guessing on the fact that they're probably going to be getting up and down the court a lot.
Well, that's the thing. If you're going to play, and as Darren DeVries has said, he likes to – his offense wants to get shots up in the first 12 seconds against a half-court defense that isn't exactly set. So if you're going to run, and if you're going to get shots up within 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds on the shot clock, your guys are going to get tired. You're going to have to be deep. You're going to have to go 9, 10 – maybe even 11 guys deep. Again, college game a little bit shorter than the pro game. So if you look at the Pacers, though, they love to run. It's a good example because the Pacers love to run. They use that to their advantage. They can throw a lot of different guys at you, 10 different guys at you. They utilize that depth so nobody's ever tired, so you can keep up that pace throughout the entire game. If you're Indiana basketball and you are trying to run, you got to have depth. You got to have guys that can come off the bench, keep up that pace. You got to have a Connor Enright, a Jason Drake, an Alexa Ristic off the bench that can come run the offense and say, hey, Peyton Conaway, those starters, Lamar Wilkerson, Tucker DeVries, whoever's starting, those guys, they were paying at breakneck pace. Now the bench comes in, we're going to continue to pay at breakneck pace. And you, if you're going to do that, you're going to have 10 guys you can trust on the court. Maybe you can shorten the rotation. Obviously, when it gets later in the season, that's obvious. But if you're going to get through a 20-game Big Ten season, if you're going to get through a non-conference slate like Indiana is scheduled to play this upcoming season, you're going to have depth. You're going to have to play 9, 10, 11 guys. So if you're Trent Sisley, if you're Alexa Ristic, if you're the younger guys on this roster, that's all the opportunity you need. Because if you go in there, if you're Trent Sisley, you go in there, you provide 8 great minutes here, then you don't play for 2 games. You provide another 7, 8, 9 great minutes there. Then all of a sudden you start to build that trust that, hey, Darren DeVries, you know what? I can trust that Trent Sisley kid. If he's going to go out there and give me 9 really solid minutes, I can go trust him here in this Big Ten road game in West Lafayette. If he needs to go in there for 5-6 minutes, I can trust him. And that's how you kind of build up that playing time over time. So that's kind of the goal for Indiana. You got to have a deep rotation if you're going to play fast. And then it's all about building trust and building and taking that opportunity if you're some of those younger guys that aren't playing as much early on.
Latrell Allman, you mentioned him earlier, but he's one that also Joe Tipton says, thinks that Indiana is kind of the front runner, but he had a huge weekend, and so he's probably going to pick up some more offers. But if Indiana, even if you get a commitment now, it doesn't really matter. Commitments are almost worthless. The only thing that means much is an National Letter of Intent. That carries some weight, but a commitment is – It's almost like a promise ring of sorts. It doesn't mean a lot, but it's at least a forward approach. And if Indiana could get yet a second commitment from someone like him, I mean, they would be off and running and be almost not finished with recruiting, but halfway done. And that will also in turn probably draw more. It's just more honey to draw more bees.
You're exactly right. And I will say, as much as we always like to talk about and joke about how commitments aren't necessarily the end-all be-all anymore, you got to wait till they sign. That's true for sure, absolutely. But still, the overwhelming majority of high school recruits that do end up committing do end up signing as well. I mean, you see the big headlines. I mean, IU football just had somebody flip, but the overwhelming majority, it's like 90, 95% of the guys that commit end up signing with that place. So while, yes, commitments aren't the end-all be-all, and you do if you're Indiana and you're Darren DeVries, you still have to continue recruiting a kid after they commit. you feel good with a guy like Prince Alexander Moody already committing. Now you just, now it's the easy part. Now you just get to continue fostering that relationship, check in with them from time to time. It's the easy part now. You've already done the hard part. You've got that commitment. But yeah, Latrell Allman, he is fantastic. If you go watch any Latrell Allman film, he jumps out on the page, whether he's in a game with other five-star recruits or other top 25 recruits, or he's in a game against fourth graders. He's going to stand out. He is that type of athlete. He's shooting 45% from three-point range this summer slash spring. He's been able to knock down the three-point shot. He's athletic. He's kind of a prototype wing forward. He's not exactly a true center. He's not your 7 foot, 6'11", shot-blocking rim protector, but he's 6'8", 6'9", athletic, can put the ball on the floor. He is a fantastic player. He's a top 25 ranked player, according to On3, for a reason. So if Kenny Johnson's able to continue to further strengthen that relationship, Indiana did get him on campus a few weeks ago. And I heard that visit went well. I heard that Darren DeVries was able to do a good job there. Again, Darren DeVries is kind of like the closer, and that's what your head coach is. You kind of have your assistants kind of bring the guys in, establish that bond, establish that relationship. And then once guys get on campus, that's when your head coach steps in and is like, all right, guys, let's close the deal. Let's get that commitment. And I think that's where Darren DeVries comes into play. That's what he did with Prince Alexander Moody. I think that's what he's trying to do with Latrell Allman. And Allman is a fantastic player. And he's somebody that Indiana fans, if he does end up committing, I think Indiana fans would love just his athleticism, his excitement. I was talking with somebody the other day. Now, this isn't a perfect example, but it's just kind of to put it into perspective for Indiana fans. I kind of picture Latrell Allman as Justin Smith, but a top 25 ranked recruit version of Justin Smith. He's very athletic. If he catches the ball, free throw line, elbow extended, he can put the ball on the floor, drive by pretty much anybody. He's athletic. He can finish, but he's got a much better shot than Justin Smith. He's obviously a little bit higher ranked than Justin Smith, probably looking for a better player than Justin Smith in the end. But just to put it into perspective, that's where I would kind of model Latrell Allman after, if you're looking for an IU player comparison.
Yeah, and so they've done quite well. And then on the football side of things, they're going quite well. Also, you mentioned earlier, they did have the kid flip from Indiana to Florida State. The only negative on the board for recruiting for Indiana this season, because they've had several flip themselves from Illinois, from Louisville. So they have done a tremendous job. That was a blow, but it's not something that I don't expect Indiana to replace.
Well, you're exactly right. And of course, that comes with a grain of salt. Florida State, a legacy school for Jay Timmons, who was the kid that flipped from IU to Florida State. Florida State, a legacy school. His dad, Lawrence Timmons, the former Steeler, he went there, was an all-time great at Florida State. So you can kind of give the pass on that one. It's really hard for anybody, let alone IU, to kind of hold a guy from going to a legacy school like that. But Indiana, on the football side, the class is rounding into final form. It's back in the top 30. Nationally, it dropped after Timmons flipped to Florida State, but it's back in the top 30 nationally, and it's talented. There's depth, there's quality, there's both quality and quantity. This is a good recruiting class, and I think it's just kind of a sign. If you look at the top schools, the elite schools, the Ohio States, the Texases of the world, they do this year in, year out. They consistently get those four-star guys. They consistently get those five-star guys. But Indiana, this is just after 1 year of success. So imagine what Kurt Cignetti and his staff and Indiana can do on the recruiting trail after 2, 3, 4 years of success. So that's what it's all about. It's all about sustaining. Because with winning, Kurt Cignetti has said it countless times, winning opens doors pretty much everywhere. And that's especially true on the recruiting trail. I mean, you look at some of Indiana's four-star recruits, Gabe Hill, Henry Olinger. Yep. These are borderline top 100 prospects. I mean, Henry Olinger is ranked number 105 in the nation. He is the number 5 athlete in the entire country, according to On3. That is an elite, elite top-tier recruit right out of Ohio State's backyard. And
yeah, no doubt, Zach. And so that will continue. And we look forward to next Monday getting caught back up to see what else is going on as it gets a little slow. But summer workouts are right around the corner. And we're only weeks away from Big Ten Media Days out in Vegas. You'll be out there. So we'll look forward to that as well. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
They bet. Thank you. Zach Browning with thehoosier.com. That's going to wrap it up. Big thanks to everyone on the program today. Greg Ringstraw, and Dustin Empiric as well. Most importantly, thanks to each and every one of you. We're back tomorrow to do it again. See what all is new. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.